brought to you by Kirby Medical Center. A CrossFit coach, Jordan Barney, and a soccer coach, Dan Birkebeil, bring you their insights into physical fitness, mental preparation, and ways to improve your life. And now, your view from above, the coaching perch.
I'm at this big convention hall in Indianapolis, and it's about to play host to a huge Magic the Gathering tournament. And for those of you who don't know, Magic the Gathering is a card game. You're kind of a wizard that has 20 life, and you're trying to knock the other wizard out and get their life total under 20 or at zero. And I've been playing this game most of my life and kind of just been an amateur at it, but I'm going to this kind of like pro tour qualifying event. And I've done a few of these, haven't done that well, but I'm ready to go. Like, this room is filled with college-age kids up to middle-age adults, basically all males. They're all nerds, you know, pimples. I'm going to see way too many butt cracks for the day. Somebody got in trouble. He went around taking pictures of all the plumber's cracks that he saw at this convention one time. And it just the sheer amount of lack of hygiene, I'll put it, is pretty extraordinary at these events. And so I'm going to put myself in the midst of all these gentlemen for the most part. There's some ladies, but I'm ready to crush some dreams and really do well at this. I've kind of prepped for it. So I get there, and I know what deck I'm going to use, but I need two more cards. So I have to go to the various vendors, and, you know, one's got one. It's like $40. Yep, take it. And then I need the fourth copy, and I couldn't find it. Finally found one vendor. He had it in French, which is still legal, $50. Yep, great. So I got my deck. I'm ready to go. And the deck I'm playing is called Death and Taxes. And it is very fitting in the sense it makes your opponent pay just a little more on everything they want to do. It makes it more difficult for them to maneuver. And my items, or the things I'm going to cast, basically are free or next to free. They're very low, so I can kind of get ahead of the curve and basically kill them before they can get going. So it's not like a mainstream deck, but it's done okay, and here I am. I've studied the ins and outs of it in my analytical brain. I'm ready to go. So I run hot the first day, and, you know, you're there for 13 hours, and it's bad convention food, and you're thinking all day. So you come out of those things with a huge headache. But I come out of there, I'm 8-0. I've just played really well, played really tight, made great decisions all day. And so I've got one more match, and I'm trying to go 9-0 on day one. And the guy I'm playing against, he has this combo, and he wins the first game. It's best of three. And the second one, I stop his combo and win, so we go to the rubber match of game three. In my opening hand, I have a way to stop his main combo, but I'm thinking he's going to use a secondary combo. So I ship my hand, which is you mulligan and you take a new hand. And so this hand has a way to stop the other combo I'm thinking about. Well, sure enough, as he goes, I pick the wrong combo. It was just kind of a 50-50 choice, and he wins. So I go 8-1 on day one, and you have to be, it's like top 200 to make day two. And there's 1,300 people in this particular event. So to go 8-1, make day two, I'm riding high. This is awesome. And so, you know, you go back to the hotel, and this is before I had kids, and Jess was with me, and she's just shopping. And so I go back the next morning, and I'm sitting next to, like, pros at this game that, like, do this for a living. And I'm, like, getting ready to face them. Like, this is awesome. And so I do okay kind of in the morning, and it gets to a point where I get to a match, and if I win, I'm going to be top 64 out of this big tournament, like guaranteed top 64. So I'm telling myself, like, this is guaranteed money. Like, I'm going to get $400 if I win this, and this isn't just $400. This is $400 that I get to turn around and spend on more Magic cards. Like, there's nothing Jess can tell me about this money. This is my money for winning the tournament. Or, you know, at least placing top 64. So I play this guy from New York, and kind of a jerk, and you could tell he traveled from New York to Indy to play in this tournament. Like, it's a big deal to him. So I think I take match one, he takes match two, so we go to the rubber match again, and I do pretty well. I made some really good choices, and basically you get 50 minutes to finish the round, and it goes to time. So it's I go, he goes, I go, he goes, and I've kind of got him on the ropes, and I'm getting ready to win, and I'm so excited, like, top 64, here I go, let's go. And I forget to turn the dice one way just to indicate I'm doing something, and my creature dies just to no fault but my own stupidity and my own excitement. And so he's able to stall and just block basically 4 points that I needed to kill him legally right then and there. So we go to a draw because time's up. Had we had more time, he's still dead to rights. I've got him on the next turn, but since it went to time, I'm toast. And so we draw, and then the next match I play, I don't have a good matchup, and I lose. And so I finish like 75th. I just outside of the money. And I'm so disappointed, and just, you know, it was all in my hands, and I let it go. And so I tell this story for a couple reasons, but I always tell this to my soccer players. And what podcasting is storytelling, and I tell this to my soccer guys because it's something that they can remember, and it means it's more meaningful to them or maybe even to me. And, you know, there's that saying of it's not over till the fat lady sings. Like, I hate the coaches that have all these cliches and they just kind of repeat them, and you know, it's dumb. It just doesn't work. But when I can tell a story and I can reference it, I say, guys, we're not thinking about the $400. Like, it is go time. Like, we have to put the gas pedal down. We haven't won anything yet. And so they remember that story, and it's to me, it's much more powerful that they have that connection with me now as a coach that I've told this story. You know, I guess I like telling stories. I like talking to myself, or, you know, here you guys are listening to me solo. And, you know, I think it's just a powerful thing. And we've talked a lot about this. So Mark Fred, my boss, listens to, it's called Moth Hour Radio, and they do storytelling competitions. And you put your name in a hat, and then they draw random people to come up and tell a story. And so I listened to this on the podcast, their own podcast, as Mark put me on this. And it's really interesting, and I think a lot of the people have been coached through telling a good story. So, you know, I learned from that, but at the same time, it was like they would insert, like, political opinions on things, and it was just like, all right, you just took, like, a really good story and then made it political, and now I have, like, zero interest in this. And so I got a little off-put by that, but as I was, like, studying more and more about it, there was a guy, a gentleman that had done really well, and they kept asking him to come back to tell stories. So this particular gentleman is Matthew Dix, and he's got a book, and it's called Storyworthy. I immediately ordered this, and I just ripped through it. And so this is my book of the year for 2023, now that I'm 2 months into 2024. So best book I read all year, and it talks about basically good ways to tell stories and tips and tricks and just really, really, really good stuff. You know, he talks about, like, a story is a way to make people feel less lonely. And a lot of what he preaches is you want to tell a story about a time you struggled. He calls it like an F story, like I got an F on a test rather than an A+. Because it's how did I come back from that F, or what did I do? Did I have to drop out of school and do something else? It tells a more interesting story. I guess there's Friday Night Lights, the team they follow. I haven't watched this, but the team they follow in that series, and I guess on Netflix, they follow the year they came up short in the championship. So I guess spoiler alert. But the next year they ended up winning. And so when they went back and did like a document, or when they went back to tell this story, they were more interested in telling the story of just coming up short. That is often more relatable when we come up short, or we've had things that just didn't go our way, than I came out a champion, because we're not all champions. You know, I came up short in this Magic the Gathering tournament, and people can relate to that. And so I like the idea of people not being lonely, and you as a head coach, as a boss, I think when you're in that kind of leadership role, it can be lonely because sometimes it's just you. Maybe you have an assistant that helps you, or maybe you have a supervisor or athletic director that supports you. But at the same time, it's just kind of you, and the buck stops with you. So if there's things that go wrong, parents have complaints, like, it's just you, and you have to live through that. But if I can tell stories to other coaches or other athletes and say, this is what happened and this is how I handled it, it makes them feel less lonely. Like, this guy's going through the same stuff I am. So it just nails it up from the get-go. In the foreword, this gentleman, I'm going to read it directly here. He says, Matthew Dix taught me that trying to get better at storytelling also meant trying to get better at being a friend or a son or a boyfriend, a brother, or just a better person. So being a good storyteller helps you in so many ways. And I'm going to give you, I guess, in my mind, a good example here is the high school class at Monticello, English 12. They typically ask me to come do mock interviews for some of their students. And they ask some of the other business people, you know, in the area to do these interviews. And so the teacher's super nice, and it's a really cool thing. And so these students sign up for kind of a fake interview. One year I had, she was applying for this particular lady was applying for a pool. She was going to sell concessions at the pool. Now, was she really applying for that? No, but that's who I pretended to be. I was owner of the pool, and she was applying to be a concession stand worker. And so you kind of do these fake interviews. So the teacher gives me a list of questions for us to ask. Well, what do? Basically, I just throw it away. I don't even, you know, I glance at it, but I'm not going to ask these questions. These kids are prepared for these questions. So that's, to me, not the heart of an interview. And what I want from them is I want them to tell me a story. I want them to be interesting. I want to hear their story. And I want that story to match what the job I'm trying to get them to do. So that the lady applying for a pool concession stand, it took me a while to get it out of her, but eventually she's like, well, I'm an FFA and I sell fundraiser items. And it's like, that's the story you should have led with. Like, that speaks to exactly what I need as the pool owner, if you will. And so my latest batch of interviews I did maybe 2 weeks ago, and the very first question I asked them is how'd you spend your morning? Because I just want them to start to feel comfortable telling me a story. It's a very open-ended question. They can say whatever they want. And so one gentleman just, you know, I got up and went to class. Like, I was like, okay, well, then you're not a good storyteller, so let's work on this. Another gentleman goes, well, my family only has one car, so I have to take my sister to Muhammad, and then I got to school early and did this. And so I'm like, I told the teacher, bingo, right then and there, he's told me a good story. I know he's responsible. He has to be responsible for others. He's already, he's a couple points ahead in the interview, and we barely started. Great job. And so I'll do the whole interview, and then afterwards I give them feedback and say, this is what I like, this is what I didn't like. So they don't get that immediate feedback. I kind of let them struggle or let them go. Some examples I thought were very telling is the other question I'll ask is, you know, you've listed so-and-so as a reference. If I called this person, what story would they tell me about you? And so now they have to pick a specific example, and they have to think of a story, and they have to relate it to me. And it's not, you know, what would they say, you're a good worker, you know, something that's very canned. And so that was, I think, very difficult for them to, they had to think about it, and I got some candid answers. And so one gentleman said, he goes, well, the teacher will probably bring up a day I was in a bad mood and she had to pull me out of class and we just had this one-on-one talk and, you know, it went well and I figured out like how I needed to be better and you know, that's what she would probably remember. And it's like, oh boy. Like, so I told him afterwards, I'm like, hey, I appreciate you being honest, but it's like now as an employer, I'm asking myself, is this kid moody? Is this kid always in a bad mood? So I'm like, you've got to use that as an example to tell a good story. And so I'll juxtapose that with one gentleman. I said, well, you know, what would this teacher tell me about you and what story? And he said, well, like, I work with this teacher. I make props for the thespians. And when we do a school play, I make a lot of the things in my shop class. And I was like, that's awesome, man. Like, you're already showing me you can do work for others. You can work with different departments. And I'm like, when you're applying to a job, when you can work outside of your specialty, like, that's awesome. And that was a great story. So knocked it out of the park there. So the one thing I really impress on them, and maybe I need to have an HR podcast because I'm just fascinated by this stuff, is as I tell the kids, it's like you have to sell yourself and you have to really sell yourself to that company. So I asked one gentleman, I said, well, why do you want this job? Well, it's a union job, it's close to home, and you know, that was essentially it. It's like, no. Like, why do you want this job? And it just kind of stared at me, and I'll just sit there and kind of let them struggle. And so I'm probably the, like, last person they want me to interview, or, like, when the kids, like, I come into a room, because I'm not reading the answer or the questions that they prepared for me. So I said, all right, I'm going to back you up. why are you in shop class?
Oh, okay. I like to work with my hands, and I like to make things that are high quality because there's so many things you get nowadays that aren't high quality. It's like, so when I went back and reviewed with them, boom, right there. That's what you have to lead with. You have to lead with, this is why I love what I do. Not because it's for a paycheck, not because it's good vacation, not because of the benefits. It's because it's beyond that. Like, that's what's going to keep you at a job, is because you love the job itself. And it's not about, it's not just about the money. I get, you're there to work, get money anyways. Like, that's a given. I know that. Like, so let's get beyond that. With Storyworthy, the book, he gives you tips on how to be a good storyteller. And, you know, some of this I already knew and I was already decent with, but others, it's definitely helped me. And so I've done a couple different stories at work, at Rotary, and I've used his tips to kind of help me really, like, refine my story. You notice, you get right into the story. You want people to kind of be like, well, where's this person going with this? And I hate even the podcast of like, well, part one, we're going to talk about CrossFit. And part two, we'll talk about Olympic weightlifting. And then part three, we'll talk about diet. And so then they go back into part one and they talk about that. It's like, just get into it. Just tell me the story. And we're taught that in school. I remember in seventh grade, given in like how to do a baseball move. And then I went through like, this is what I'm going to tell you about. And it's like, it is very academic and it's boring and nobody likes it. I hate people that do Excel. Like, Excel is such a crutch. So you can use it usefully, but like when people give presentations and they're like, here's the Excel, here's the slides to come, and then they just sit there and read the slides. Like, it is so boring and it's such a crutch. It's like, when I do speeches, I do my best to not have an Excel sheet. I want you there with me. I want you there as part of my story. And Matthew Dix talks about this. When he goes up to give a story, he's in like a plain plaid, like a plain green shirt, a hat that has no Adidas or Nike, nothing, no symbols, no brands. He wants to be very plain. He wants you to feel like you are in his shoes. So he's not going to use props, and he's going to do everything he can to get you to feel like you're part of the story. And what would I do if I was presented with this thing? You know, would I worry about the $400, or would I just go ahead and win? Or, you know, what would that look like? And so you got to put yourself into that. And so he talks about the best stories are the ones that are relatable, and in that you're allowed to be in that position. So, you know, I tell you some crazy story about running from the police, or, you know, I got my finger chopped off or something. It could make for a good story, but at the same time, that's not relatable to a lot of people. They've never been in that scenario. So when I can take something that we've all been in and we've all struggled as a boss, as a leader, that makes for a better story. And so he talks about most stories, you really got to narrow it down to a 5-second moment of, this is what happened. So my 5-second moment was me thinking about prize money instead of thinking about what I needed to do and how that hurt me. That's that whole little short little story was just really about a 5-second moment. And so he talks about some movies, and Jurassic Park is kind of his example of, you got all these dinosaurs and all this sci-fi and all this stuff, but really the story comes down to, it's Dr. Grant is this paleontologist, and at the very beginning he has that velociraptor. He's got that talon and he carries it between his hands and kind of shows it off and flaunts it, and he scares this little boy with the talon, and he's like, they would rip you apart and basically make an X out of your chest and start eating you. And he, like, just not kind to this boy at all. But you can tell, like, he's like, I'm smart and I got all this figured out. And he hates kids. And so the story progresses, as I'm sure all of us have seen. There's one scene where I think they get caught in a tree, and Dr. Grant is basically holding on to this kid. And you can see the talon that he so cherishes, it slips out of his fingers and falls to the ground. But that doesn't matter to Dr. Grant anymore, because he'd rather hold this kid. So it's this 5-second moment of going from hating kids to basically these kids being his life, and he wants to save these kids. So you got all this other dinosaurs and all this stuff, but it makes for a good story, because I think we've all probably been there. Like, we've all, like, there's a kid we hate, or there's, you know, somebody we didn't like, and then we kind of grew out of that, or we found a way to love that person. So
you know, the my favorite movie is Robin Williams and Hook. Gosh, probably 20, 25 years old now. I watched it as a kid. And so you got Peter Pan, and you got the crocodile and the clock and Hook, and you got all these, you know, I love the story of Peter Pan. But what Steven Spielberg did in that movie was it's really about Peter Pan or Robin Williams. He was a dad, and he basically lost connection with his child. He was too busy with work, too busy with everything else, and his kid got pushed off to the side. You know, and I think as most of us parents can we have that battle of, am I spending enough time with my kids? Am I prioritizing them correctly? Like, that's so relatable. Despite all this Peter Pan and the flying and the lost boys, I can relate to Peter Pan at that point. And so the whole story essentially buried in there is Peter Pan trying to win his son back, who Hook is basically trying to win over. And it's this battle between the two. Excellent movie. That's one of my favorites. As you come up with stories, you're just looking for a 5-second moment. And that's what you want to talk about. And he challenges you to basically have homework of, there's all these little things that are very relatable in your life that you have every day. And so basically that's your homework, is to write just a little clip about, this could be a story. And so I did this like the first week after I read the book. And I'll be honest, I kind of struggled. But if you went back and look at my notes, I kind of remember a few of them. One of them was just the thought of my Prius. It's got 240,000 miles on it. It's not fancy, but it's like the old reliable car. And like, I've had that since college, since 08, and it's been one car, it's paid for. And it's just something about like something being reliable and having like the first big purchase you had and paying that off, and what that, you know, how that fits in your life and how much you should appreciate something like that. So there may be a story there. I don't know. I guess I tried to tell a little one. You know, one of my notes was the soccer boys were, you know, talking about, I lost somebody that went to, color guard. Is that where you twirl the flags and all that? And I was like, guys, he knows what he's doing. He's surrounded by a bunch of women. And the my soccer guys just kind of scoff at me and they laugh. And so I know, like, am I not with this anymore? You know, I'm not with the times. I'm not cool anymore. But there's a story there, at least I think. So just stuff like that that maybe catches your eye or you know, makes you smile during the day is that could be a story. So he also talks about you want stories to have their ups and downs. And nobody wants to hear about when I ask you, well, how was your vacation? You say, well, I went to the pool and I went to this great restaurant and we went swimming and it was just awesome. Like, nobody really cares. Like, you don't want this laundry list of and. But if I can, you know, I think the example he gives is you can say, yeah, I had this great dinner at a restaurant. Like, that's kind of a boring story. But if you say, I think the example he uses is a fly flew into your soup on a hot date and you can see this fly drowning. And what do you do? Like, there's a story there. Do you, you know, you're almost intrigued. Like, what would you do? Would you? And it's a stupid thing, but that's more interesting than, yeah, we had a great dinner. And so, you know, finding things that, or telling stories as you can, this happened, but then this happened, or except I expected this, but then this happened. I went there to crush Magic players, but at the same time, like, I did a good job, but then I came up short, you know, and it fluctuates. So I'll leave you with this at the end, and I'll read this directly here. I despise the ongoing, never-ending, relentless conversations about the snow, the impending snow, the snowfall projections, and the incessant complaining about the snow. One of my primary goals in teaching storytelling is to make the world a more interesting place. If people know how to tell their stories and know the right stories to share, then the world becomes a more entertaining, connected, and meaningful place to live. I believe that with all my heart. So that's what I've tried to do in this podcast is let's not be boring. Let's be entertaining. Share our faults. Share our downfalls. We often learn more from our losses than we do our victories, just like in soccer all the time. I'll analyze a match we lost over and over again, whereas if we win, just kind of breeze through it and move on with my day. So thanks for sharing your stories. And with this, it's been Coach Burke, and thanks for listening.